This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, welcome to The World Today. I'm Eleanor Hall. This Thursday, the warning that Australia's ageing electricity infrastructure can't cope with renewable energy. And quantum supremacy. Are we entering a new era of computers with limitless power?
And the magic of the quantum computer is that you can encode all the information not as ones or zeros, but every bit register you have in your computer is now a one and a zero at the same time, and you end up with the computer evolving to a state where when you measure it, you get the answer that you want.
But we begin this lunchtime with the dire warning from the world's top scientists about the, quote, catastrophic impact of climate change on our oceans and our coastlines. The latest report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change finds that our oceans are warming and our sea levels are rising much faster than previously predicted. And the scientists say that if our political leaders can't agree on more aggressive joint action to reduce our carbon emissions, the implications for millions of people, including here in Australia, will be enormous. Thomas Ariti begins our coverage.
With a report warning of unprecedented changes to our global oceans, experts are calling for action. And at the same time, a community near Newcastle in New South Wales is finding out firsthand what it's like to see a treasured part of their town lost to the sea.
It's going to be a catastrophe. We're already in crisis.
Lucas Gresham is a real estate agent based in Stockton. He says his local beach is changing dramatically right before his eyes.
I don't want to really bring this back to property, but being in the role I'm in, but look, the truth is everyone should be worried. That is the truth. My house is up there and I can feel it shake. It shakes of a night, a rattle. As soon as the water hits that break wall that's in front of my property, my windows rattle. So, yeah, we should be concerned.
Heavy surf has led to large-scale erosion, tearing off huge amounts of sand and changing the terrain. But this hasn't all just happened in the last few weeks. Lucas Gresham says the beach he's looking at now barely resembles what he remembers as a kid.
Years ago, I stood here when I was a child and looked out there, and there was about 200 people standing on a sandbank that was out near the end of the breakwall. Now, that used to stop the flow of the ocean and create the waves to be much smaller by the time it hit, so it would stop that, you know, so it wasn't so harsh.
According to the IPCC, this could be the new norm. Oceans are warming faster than ever before, and sea levels are continuing to rise. In fact, on a global scale, those levels rose by around 15 centimetres during the 20th century. Now they're rising more than twice as fast, and it's getting worse. Experts warn that if nothing's done, extreme coastal flooding could become a once-a-year event in countries like Australia within the next few decades. Those events were previously experienced just once a century. Associate Professor Neroli Abram from the Australian National University is one of the coordinating authors.
We're already seeing that the oceans are taking a huge hit from climate change. They're taking up most of the extra heat that's in the climate system, so the oceans are becoming warmer. They're taking up a lot of the carbon dioxide that we emit into the atmosphere, and that's causing the oceans to become more acidic, and they're losing oxygen.
By 2050, it's estimated that more than 1 billion people around the world will live on coastal land that's less than 10 metres above sea level. So a country like Australia is hardly immune to the threat, and some say a lot more needs to be done. Melanie Collett is a technical director in water resources with the infrastructure company AECOM Australia. She looks closely at issues like coastal engineering, floodplain management, and the impacts of climate change on the built environment.
All the data collected over the years show that we're tracking worse than what we ever expected to be. Can we turn that around? I'm not sure, but it will need significant investment.
She says a lack of knowledge remains one of the key problems in Australia.
First thing we need to do is investigate where the potential impacts could be, and then we need to look at where we can actually solve the problems. Some of these areas are easy to solve. We can put some seawalls in, some coastal defence mechanisms. Some of them are not as easy.
For others, the problem goes beyond coastal infrastructure. Today's IPCC report coincides with a paper published by the Actuaries Institute and the Centre for Excellence in Population Ageing Research at the University of New South Wales. It warns that two global megatrends are set to create a perfect storm: climate change and Australia's ageing population. Dr. Ramona Meyrick is with the centre.
Investment managers, superannuation trustees and individuals managing their own super should be looking at diversifying their investments to address climate change risk. And secondly, the paper discusses the need for changes to the way governments, companies and individuals think about the risks of extreme heat.
The paper warns that without proper risk management, these global trends could overwhelm individuals, companies and government balance sheets in the decades to come.
Thomas Arita reporting. Well, as we've been hearing, the world's oceans have been absorbing 90% of the excess heat in our climate system, and that's been keeping atmospheric temperatures down. But one of the world's top oceanographers and climate scientists says we may be reaching a tipping point on that now. Professor Matthew England is the Deputy Director of the Climate Change Research Centre at the University of New South Wales and is a contributing author on two earlier IPCC assessment reports. Professor England, welcome back to the world today.
Thanks, Eleanor.
Now, you've been researching the effect of climate change on oceans for more than 2.5 decades. What, to you, is the most important message from this latest IPCC report?
I think the most important message is this ramp up in urgency for emissions reductions. So the IPCC have been reviewing all of the climate science coming out of the peer-reviewed literature for a couple of decades now, and it's extremely rare for them to go out on a limb and call something catastrophic. I mean, for the IPCC to come out and talk about catastrophic rates of sea level rise that will inundate all of the world's coastlines and displace tens of millions of people, even by the middle of this century, is a very confronting finding. But I'm really pleased to see this because they're calling it like it is. The rate of warming we're seeing in the ocean, already about a degree Celsius globally, there's a massive amount of energy you're pumping into that system. And that energy doesn't just sit there. It raises sea levels due to thermal expansion. It melts ice at the polar caps. It intensifies tropical cyclones. So there's payback, if you like. The oceans store the heat for us, but we end up with detrimental impacts on our climate system.
This report focuses on the oceans and the ice caps, and it is predicting more rapid sea level rises and faster melting of the world's ice continents compared to just 5 years ago. Some people accuse scientists of exaggerating the threat. Does this suggest that scientists have actually been overcautious in their predictions?
Part of what's happening is a lot of these signals that we previously saw creeping along at a certain rate, these have picked up in the last 5 years because we're basically pumping more and more greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. These greenhouse gases energize the system, they warm the oceans, they melt the polar ice caps. So this acceleration is expected, but the fact that it's gone as high an acceleration as we've seen has been surprising.
You've been swimming in the world's oceans for years, often as part of your research. How has it changed, even during your lifetime?
Yeah, I mean, off the Tasman Sea, it's the main place I swim. It's really warmed dramatically. Our winters barely drop the temperature below 16 degrees Celsius these days. So ocean swimmers have been loving these warmer conditions, but it's disastrous for the polar ice caps.
One scientist calls the Arctic sea ice decline unprecedented in at least 1,000 years. Are we getting close to some of the feared tipping points for climate change at the Earth's poles?
Yes, potentially. We don't know how close we are to these tipping points. Unfortunately, those tipping points are often only discovered once we've passed them. And the Arctic's a great example. Once the ice melts there, that system absorbs heat much more rapidly than a reflective ice surface. And that warming at the Arctic is so rapid that the Greenland ice sheet that's sitting right next to it is exposed to much, much warmer temperatures. And unfortunately, there's so much ice locked up in them that we're talking 5 metres sea level rise by the year 2300. You know, all of the world's cities will have to be thinking about sea walls at a massive cost or abandoning huge infrastructure. When you have tipping points, you actually see a rate of change to the system that's so rapid that actually adapting becomes probably impossible.
And you're saying that even scientists are often not aware when we're approaching a tipping point.
Yeah, tipping points come about due to the non-linearity of the system. And what I mean by that is that you get a small change triggering a larger impact and get breaking up of the ice sheet and a rate of sea level rise that is far more rapid than we are comfortable to adapt to. At the moment, we've only had 15 centimetres of sea level rise over the last 30 or 40 years. And that's already caused a lot of damage to the coast. So 15 centimetres is a very tiny fraction of the 5 metres being forecast for the year 2300. And I should say 2300 does sound like a long, long time away, but it's actually only 6 or 7 generations. And that's why you're seeing all these protests from students today. They're recognising the fact that we're leaving them with a huge debt.
The IPCC reports are commissioned from the world's top scientists by the global political leaders to help guide policy responses to climate change. What do you make of the Australian Prime Minister's speech to the UN today, where he didn't dismiss climate change action, but he said plastic in the world's oceans is a more immediate problem?
This is the second phase of avoiding addressing the problem, unfortunately. We've had many politicians deny that it's a problem altogether and say it's not real. The next phase is really where our Prime Minister is at, where you say, well, it's maybe a problem, but there's other stuff we should deal with first. Unfortunately, this is just another delay tactic. It is not at all the case that plastics pose a greater threat than climate change. Far from it. We don't like plastics going in the oceans. They do affect ecosystems, but it's not a planetary disaster that sees hundreds of millions of people displaced from their habitats. We shouldn't ignore plastics, but climate change poses a far greater threat to humanity.
Professor England, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Eleanor.
That's Professor Matthew England from the University of New South Wales. He's a climate scientist and contributor to two previous IPCC assessment reports. The Australian government's also facing calls to act on fixing the nation's electricity system to ensure that it's capable of dealing with the rising use of renewable energy. The federal government's energy advisor, the Australian Energy Market Commission, has released its findings into a range of issues facing the grid. It warns the existing network is not ready to handle a big influx of rooftop solar and that major reform is needed if Australians are to avoid being slugged with higher electricity bills. David Sparks has our report.
We've long been told that Australia is the perfect continent for solar energy to thrive, and that's underlined by news that Australian billionaire Mike Cannon-Brookes will invest in the world's biggest solar farm in Tennant Creek in the Northern Territory. This morning, the Chief Minister Michael Gunner could barely contain his excitement about the Atlassian founder's backing for the $25 billion Sun Cable project, which would supply electricity to Darwin and Singapore.
We're talking about the world's largest solar farm, world's largest battery, and a power line all the way to Singapore to provide 20-30% of Singapore's power. This is an incredible project. It'll be world-leading, and it speaks to our renewables agenda here in the Northern Territory.
But renewable energy brings with it some big challenges. The Australian Energy Market Commission has released a report warning the rise of rooftop solar has reached a point where a choice needs to be made between spending billions on new physical infrastructure like poles, wires and substations, or creating what it calls the grid of the future. Chairman John Pearce told AM if the wrong choices are made, household electricity bills will rise.
Our sense of urgency, given the uptake of these resources, and remember that in this sector, decisions that are made today about investment last for decades. Not making these sorts of reforms and starting now is setting ourselves up for a repeat of the sort of experience of driving large amounts of investment in hard infrastructure, which flows through to higher prices.
The Grattan Institute's Tony Wood says he agrees with the concerns raised by the Commission. He says the most fundamental change from the electricity grids of the last century is that rooftop solar means electricity now flows in two directions instead of one.
Well, one of the challenges here is that the current system has been built to deliver electricity from a central system out to homes and businesses, and that's through all these substations, which weren't designed to take what people call two-way flows. That is a situation in which not only do people at certain times of the day consume electricity, but at other times of the day, businesses and homes could actually be selling electricity back to the system, and the system wasn't set up for that. And secondly, one of the challenges is that our electricity demand is one of the peakiest. By that I mean we tend to use a lot at certain times of the day and hardly any at other times of the day. And that puts enormous strain on the system if we don't find a way of balancing that. So rather than just keeping building more and more capacity to meet very short periods of peak demand, a system of the future would have ways in which the electricity, when we've got more demand than we have supply, can be producing electricity efficiently from various sources, including from possibly stored electricity in batteries and so forth. At other times, when we've got more supply than we have demand, that extra supply, which, for example, could be lots of solar in the middle of the day when people aren't using that much electricity, could be stored in either in home batteries or in what would be called system-wide storage facilities, such as bigger batteries, and then used to do the opposite at other times of the day. That's the sort of system of the future that we need to be aiming for.
Among other changes, Tony Woods says investment in the physical infrastructure of the future would focus more on batteries and storage rather than poles and wires. But another big change seen as critical to the network of the future is getting consumers to use electricity at off-peak times and those with solar rooftops to put energy back in at peak times. Professor Ken Baldwin is an energy expert from the Australian National University. He says our current network is a relic of the past.
If you've got rooftop solar, you should be paid a premium to deliver that electricity to the market at times of high demand. And what this means is that there will be the opportunity, first of all, to turn off your demand, your appliances, your air conditioning, et cetera, when the market price is high. It is about changing behaviour and timing, but this can only be done through technology. It will require not only smart metering to tell you what your demand is at a particular time, but it'll also require computerisation of your household appliances, batteries and solar to export to the grid at the best time.
Ken Baldwin and Tony Wood both say state and federal governments need to act now to tackle the problems identified by the Commission. Federal Energy Minister Angus Taylor told The World Today the government supports policies that provide flexibility and choice for Australian consumers, and it's crucial that any changes put those consumers first. He says he agrees it's critical Australia's energy system evolves to manage two-way energy flows safely and efficiently.
David Sparks reporting. This is The World Today. Well, to the impeachment saga in the United States now, and today the Ukrainian president has spoken out about the phone call at the centre of the investigation. The White House has released a summary of the call, and it indicates that the US President Donald Trump did ask his Ukrainian counterpart to investigate the prominent Democrat Joe Biden as what he called a favour. But the Ukrainian leader denies feeling threatened or coerced by President Trump. Isabel Rowe has the latest.
The former stand-up comedian turned Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, says he's his own man. No reality TV star turned US president tells him what to do.
Nobody can put pressure on me, and nobody will put pressure on me. Anybody can say what they want. You're welcome to. I'm open.
The new Ukrainian leader spoke to journalists after meeting President Trump in New York, revealing he didn't think his side of the contentious phone conversation would be made public.
They told us they want to publish it. I just thought they would publish their part, but that's okay.
The call is now the centre of an impeachment investigation sparked by Democrats who believe the president has broken the law by asking Ukraine to investigate his political rival Joe Biden. The conversation that's been released is not a true transcript, but compiled from notes taken during the call by US officials. Trump denies the document proves he coerced his counterpart, but American political historian Alan Lichtman believes the president's intentions were clear.
No one can mistake his meaning. Of course, Donald Trump was not going to say, "You do this for me and I'll give you the aid, otherwise I'll withhold it." But you could hear the voice of Don Corleone from The Godfather in what he was saying. You know, the United States has been very, very good to Ukraine. Now I just want you to do me this little favour.
Opinions are divided on whether President Trump has broken the law. Time magazine Washington correspondent Jay Newton Small says it depends on who you ask.
If you ask Democrats in the House, they say that this is very much a smoking gun. They believe that this is grounds, and they've already said that they're going to move towards opening impeachment proceedings against the president. They said that this combined with a report from the whistleblower, which those Democrats who've read the report say that it is incredibly detailed and that as well is very damning. And that this could actually be the smoking gun that is grounds to impeach the president. The president himself and others say, much like the Mueller investigation, much like the Mueller report, this is all just a witch hunt.
Donald Trump has again today brought up the concerns that sparked his controversial call to the Ukrainian president. He claims Biden, who was vice president at the time, called for Ukraine's top prosecutor to be fired because he'd once investigated a Ukrainian gas company where Biden's son, Hunter, worked. However, US journalists say the claim has been debunked, with MSNBC presenter Nicole Wallace cutting the president off during his media conference to fact-check him.
A few minutes ago, the
We
Amazon
hate to do this,
Washington
really,
Post
but the president isn't telling the truth. These allegations against Joe Biden and Hunter Biden that he's repeating have been investigated by the Ukrainians, none other than the Wall Street Journal included in their report on Friday that the Ukrainians view this issue as having been investigated and adjudicated. And What's amazing is that what Trump appears to be trying to do is to turn his own impeachment into a big deflection.
The next step is a vote on whether to launch an impeachment inquiry. Some Democrats want that to happen as soon as October. Republicans are split. Some say they're troubled by the allegations, but the majority oppose the call for impeachment. University of Chicago Professor William Howell says the likelihood of this venture succeeding is low.
The question is not whether or not the Senate might actually convict. That seems highly unlikely, barring some extraordinary revelation of deep and gross abuses of presidential power. Rather, the question is, how is this going to play out in 2020?
Big question indeed. That's University of Chicago Professor William Howell. Isabel Rowe reporting. Well, now to our story about quantum supremacy. Are we entering the era of computers with limitless power? And could they eventually help solve some of our biggest challenges, like addressing climate change or curing cancer? Gavin Coote has been finding out.
But we've lost those computers with all of the 13th century in them.
It was dubbed the world's file cabinet in the 1975 science fiction movie Rollerball.
Zero, of course. He's the central brain, the world's brain.
But even the computer known as Zero, with all the world's knowledge, had its limitations.
Answer him.
Negative.
You don't have to give him a full political briefing. Answer.
Negative.
Flash forward almost half a century, and it's possible some of the quantum computer technology that's been developed could have answered the questions in Rollerball. A quantum computer is a computer that processes information using the laws of quantum physics, and Google now claims it's achieved quantum supremacy, a declaration that has quantum physicists excited.
What Google has shown is that the particular operation they did with their computer is something that would take 10,000 years to do on a classical computer.
Ben Buchler is an associate professor in quantum physics at Australian National University. He's been closely watching what's been going on over at Google. The digital giant has run this computation using qubits, the building blocks of quantum computers, which would take a conventional computer thousands of years to do in a mere 200 seconds. The news was first published in a draft report on the NASA website, but was taken down shortly afterward. Ben Buchler says it's a breakthrough, as they've been able to achieve something with quantum computer principles that even the world's fastest supercomputer wouldn't be able to do.
But their operation wasn't really computing anything of use. It was just what they call a random benchmarking exercise. So the computer was programmed with a random sort of configuration of qubits that interacted with each other, and they did this over and over again to see how fast it could come up with, evolve to some end state, and they could measure that. And if you did an equivalent calculation on a classical computer, it would take a very long time, but it was certainly not something that is interesting at this stage in terms of the actual output. The techniques they used to get that were extremely interesting.
So if it's able to achieve the impossible, as Google claims, does this include some of our biggest challenges like stopping climate change or curing cancer? Ben Buchler says it's still a bit of an open question.
So when it comes to things like finding new drugs, then there's certainly scope for a quantum computer perhaps to be used to calculate the way proteins fold and develop new drugs. Although, you know, the specific algorithms to do that haven't been written yet, but that's certainly something people are speculating could be done. In terms of climate change, I think that is a political social problem. you can certainly potentially compute things that are complicated, but I think we already know how to solve climate change. We're just not doing it.
And for tackling the impossible, he says it will mean finding the right algorithms and making computers large enough to run these algorithms. And it's hoped Australia could have a hand in this.
What's really interesting about this situation at the moment for me as a quantum physicist who's working in this area is that there are actually a lot of different platforms that people are working on. So the Google quantum computer uses what they call superconducting qubits. And, you know, they've packed 53 working qubits together. And it's not really known whether that is scalable up to, you know, hundreds or thousands or millions of qubits. And so there are different companies around the world and different research groups looking at different technologies. And so, I mean, in Australia, we have a group at UNSW. It's part of the center I work for, and they work on silicon qubits. And so at the moment, they haven't got a computer that's nearly as large as Google's, but it's possible that their technology will scale better. And so at this stage, you know, Google's got a jump on everyone with their technology, but in 10 years or 20 years, it's actually very difficult to tell whether Google will still be out in front with the platform that they're investing in at the moment. It's possible there are other platforms around that will end up being preferable.
And that's Australian National University quantum physicist Ben Buchler speaking to Gavin Coote. And that's all from the World Today team for this Thursday. Linda Mottram and the PM team will be along this evening, and we'll be back at the same time tomorrow. I'm Eleanor Hall. Have a lovely afternoon.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.
Hi, I'm Angela Voipier.
And I'm Stephen Stockwell, and we're from the ABC's daily news podcast, The Signal. After holding off for months, the Democrats have finally pulled the trigger on impeaching Donald Trump, and things are moving very, very quickly.
So how did a call from Donald Trump to the Ukrainian president push the Democratic Party over the line? And what happens next? That's The Signal. Find us every weekday morning on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.